And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 30th of May. How are you all keeping out there? Thank you very much for joining us for another edition of the 9 till noon show, and it's another one packed to the rafters for you. Coming up very shortly, in fact, we'll be joined by Taoiseach Simon Harris, who has agreed to have a chat with us about various issues. So looking forward to that. And then after 10 o'clock, we also have our penultimate, yes, our second last local election debate. And we are focusing once again on Lifford Stranorlar. There are 12 candidates contesting six seats. And we have five of those people looking for your votes in that area on the show today. Martin Scanlon's an independent. Dakota, Nick Venman is of Sinn Féin. Patrick McGowan of Fianna Fáil. Gary Doherty of Sinn Féin. An interesting panel there. So if you are in the east of the county, in the Finn Valley, in the Lifford Stranorlar area, please get your questions and comments into us now. What is important to you? 086 60 25,000. What do you want to see sorted out? 086 60 25,000. Right, you can also email the show, comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the programme, of course, you can do so as you can every day. If you want to watch on your large screen TV or your smart TV at home, if you are at home, or your Fire Stick, we're on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. On our Facebook pages, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, we're on the X platform. And you can just go in and watch in your browser, click Watch Live. I've only got time for a brief look at the front of the papers, so it's pretty much just the headlines today. The Tyrconnell Tribune, farmers facing same sad end as fishermen. That was the view of one farmer on Monday night in the election debate for EU candidates hosted by the Irish Cattle and Sheep Farmers Association in Letterkenny. The Donegal News have a bit of a scoop there. They've got an interview with a young Letterkenny man who was on that flight, the Qatar Airways flight, that suffered a great deal of turbulence. So they have an interview with him in that paper today. The Derry News calls for tougher animal cruelty sentences. This after two men arrested as PSNI launch animal cruelty probe. On to the Nationals. Towns now identified for new migrant camps outside Dublin's the Irish Independent's top story. Migrants arriving in Dublin has been moved to a number of new camps across the country as part of an effort to reduce pressure on the city. And the government has also has plans to open a new asylum processing centre outside of the capital. This, of course, to sort of take the attention, it seems, away from the capital there. The Irish Times talks of an operation which has concluded by now. Migrant tents set to be cleared from Grand Canal area. That happened this morning. It took 45 minutes. NGO-funded tents. NGOs often funded by the government, of course. And those tents just hauled up and chucked into the back of a lorry, effectively. Money down the drain. The Irish Daily Star. Keno attacker trial. Roy Butt. I'm no hard man. But I'm no hard man, and Butt is double T, playing on the headbutt situation. The Irish Farmers Journal, the findings of that poll are really quite remarkable. Independent shake up the farming vote is their headline. Hedging, fledgling political party Independent Ireland would harvest 11% of farmers' first preference votes if a general election was called next week. The vote for Fine Gael, pretty good in the Euro vote poll element of that. And also support for Charlie McConnell, steadying off, I think is how they described it. All right, OK, as I say, we don't have time for a very extensive look through the newspapers this morning. Just to remind you, coming up after 10 o'clock, we have the local election debates again, focusing on Lifford Stranorlar. Tomorrow's our last one, where we have candidates in the Buncrana area. And then next week, you're free of it if you want us to go back to the regular way of doing the show. And don't forget, we've got extensive coverage of the election. The vote's on Friday, and then on Saturday and Sunday, we will have wall-to-wall, where necessary, wall-to-wall coverage. So you'll know exactly who's elected, when they're elected, where they're elected, who lost out. There's going to be some big stories in that, because there's some, as I say, some interesting stories to be told yet about the local elections in this county, and you'll hear them all here on Highland Radio. You'll be able to watch the coverage as well from Letterkenny and all the county centres around the county. So very much looking forward to that. That's Saturday and Sunday week. You're very welcome back to the programme, and a very good morning to Taoiseach Simon Harris. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
How's life as Taoiseach? A good few weeks in now.
7 weeks in now, certainly very busy, very intense, but doing my best to make progress on a number of key issues for people, and great honour to serve.
Yeah, and it's great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for accepting the invite. We'll talk about some local issues, of course, but just one that's making the headlines this morning on a national level. We're learning today that the completion date for the new National Children's Hospital will be further delayed. There's concerns now by some that a child may not receive treatment in that facility before 2026. Your reaction to that news? Very regrettable, to say the least.
Absolutely, and extremely frustrating. And from a government point of view, I'll be very eager now to support the Minister for Health, the Department of Health and the HSE, and really applying maximum pressure here to get this job finished. This is a, for anybody from Donegal who's been up in Dublin recently, I mean, this is a hospital building when you drive by it, which is vastly complete. There's obviously some small elements, important elements left to do. We really, really, really need to see this open and open urgently, because while there has been, understandably, a debate around the cost of the hospital, what there's been very little focus on so far is the benefit it's going to have to sick children from all parts of Ireland. Children who might be in Crumlin today with the mum and dad sleeping on the floor last night because they're in proper family rooms, they're in proper ensuite rooms in many cases. And again, a lot of sick children who spend a significant period of time, many months in some cases, in this hospital. So this hospital is going to be transformational for children's healthcare in Ireland. We need to get it open as a matter of urgency. And I think we need to really scrutinise what we're being told now by the developer, scrutinise it both in terms of the words but also in terms of the contract, and apply maximum pressure to get this hospital handed over.
Do the board have enough teeth to do that, or is that something that happens above that layer of administration?
Both, but I think the government will be very eager to support the board in making sure that this project is completed urgently, and we look at all the levers at the disposal of the board and the government in relation to that.
Well, your government greenlit the budget, $2.24 billion, I think it was. Do you expect that to rise now?
It's always impossible to say the final cost of any project, because what happens is, you know, a developer puts in a claim and says, you know, it's going to cost this amount or that amount, and then often the board ends up actually rebutting, and often successfully rebutting that. So they've been very successful so far in actually pushing back on many of the extra claims submitted by the developer. So unfortunately for many, many projects of this scale, the actual very final cost isn't known until after the project is completed. But I can tell you this, we've significantly resourced the board to be able to make sure that any claims that we believe to be spurious or excessive are defended on behalf of the taxpayer.
You know, as you would know, we are in the mouth of the local and European elections, and that brings some of the big issues to the fore for many people, and some of the topics that have been dominating the debates, not least, of course, defective concrete. At the moment, we have a scheme that many sees not fit for purpose. Lots of families are seeing a significant shortfall in funding to rebuild their homes. And as you know, they are the complete innocent victims in all of this. I mean, there is a multi-billion euro scheme there in place. Surely it should be expanded, Taoiseach, so that it is fair to, if not all, the vast majority of people trying to access it.
Well, look, I am very conscious, as you've said, as you've rightly said, that there is a very, very expansive and large scheme in place, as there should be, to help people who are living in the most horrific circumstances in terms of anxiety, stress and financial concern in terms of their family home. There is also a number of structures that have been put in place in terms of a technical matters steering group, for example, in relation to the defective home scheme. So, look, I'm very eager that the department and the government continues to engage with the community and with representatives in Donegal to make sure that the scheme delivers for people. This is a massive scheme, though. I mean, we're talking about a scheme that is going to run to the billions, and there's already been many applications received into the scheme. I'm just reading some figures I have in front of me here. I think the 1,644 applications have been received to the previous scheme, 436 to the enhanced scheme as well. So there's quite a number of applications that are already in. But it is, I mean, what I am told is that there's preliminary research results that do form part of the NSAI review, and it is too early to draw some conclusions in relation to that matter until the full review has been completed. So there's a lot going on in this space. We're eager to continue to work with people in Donegal and other counties to make sure that the scheme is delivering in the way we wanted it to.
Could you see it be expanded, though? Do you believe it to be expanded? If it's proven that the majority aren't getting 100% redress, would you like to see that reviewed? Because, I mean, I'm not sure if it trickles down to your office, Minister, but the impact this is having on people's well-being, you know, pensioners who are afraid that if they die mid-scheme, that the claim for rebuilding costs goes with them. You know, families who literally have nowhere else to go, and the house is unheatable, yeah. And the kids are, yeah, in bedrooms that have got black mould all over the place. These aren't, I'm not cherry picking, you know, two or three really emotive stories, but I just hope, I've a lot of respect for you, but I just, and so I know you'd want to hear this. I just hope that the reality of people's lived experience, the thousands of families, sort of gets to your ears so that, you know what I mean? It's not, I'm not being anti-government or being dramatic. It's just, I kind of feel I have a responsibility to make sure that you hear how bad it is for people up here.
No, look, you're being very fair, Greg, and I wouldn't expect you to do anything less. And I want to assure you and your listeners, and I want to assure those families that I am very aware of those stories, very aware of the stress, the pressure, the anxiety. Came up with me recently at an Oireachtas committee. I've received correspondence from deputies in the region as well. And what I will do, what I will say to people in Donegal today, is that I will keep an active interest. An active interest in this matter. I know how serious it is for people. I know how stressful it is. I also know how dangerous it can be. And I will continue to keep a very active interest liaising with the Minister for Housing. I think the key thing we must do as a government here is keep the lines of communication open to make sure that the scheme we've put in place delivers. A lot of money has gone into the scheme. I don't say that in a self-congratulatory way. It's important we do this for people. And therefore, we do want the scheme to deliver for people. So we'll certainly keep active lines of communication open, and I'll personally continue to take an interest in the issue.
I appreciate that. And just a couple of points on this. One of the big problems is that those that are affected effectively have to become project managers. Do you know what I mean? One of the big calls is that the government has the tools, it has the experience, it hopefully it has the resources, that this could be an end-to-end project, do you know what I mean? Whereby people who are professional, and probably could get better value for the taxpayer as well. It's an awful pressure for people to try and project manage this all by themselves. Would that be something that you're interested in looking at?
Yeah, look, I think that I can understand the logic in that, in terms of, you know, as you rightly say, alleviating some of the stress and pressure from families, and also perhaps having a degree of expertise that can oversee the project. I certainly think there's a logic in that. I don't want to, because these families don't want to be given kind of flippant comments by government on radio. I am happy to talk to the minister about that and explore that idea.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a scheme that is now open. As I say, we've received over 1,600 applications already, and over 350 applications to the enhanced scheme. I mean, what I want to see here is, I want to see delivery for people here, people who've been living in the most horrific of circumstances and with the most horrific of circumstances. I want to see the money that we've set aside beginning to flow now, so that people can get some peace of mind. And if there are anomalies or issues that pop up along the way, as I hear the community saying, I'm eager that we engage in good faith and see if we can work through them.
Yeah, because we all have a responsibility to spend tax money responsibly. As you said, there's a huge amount of money going into this. So can you see the sense, Taoiseach, in rebuilding homes on top of foundations and rising walls, that the science has already shown to be affected by these materials that damage the concrete? You know, surely, and you talked of the figures that are entering onto the scheme, they would be much greater, but I think a lot of people are holding back because Sinn Féin have promised a bells and whistles sort of approach to this, at least for the principal private residents. People are holding back because they can't see the logic of rebuilding on foundations that are already proven to be failing, and also the rising walls. It doesn't make any sense. And it just, if we don't get this right now, Taoiseach, we're going to be returning to this in 10 or 20 years, and it's going to cost the taxpayer even more.
Yeah, look, I mean, what I would say is this. I mean, and I'm not going to play politics with this in terms of what other parties say. I'm sure everybody approaches this in good faith. But what I would say is this. I mean, we now have an implementation steering group in place. It's put in place for this very reason, to tease through and work through issues. I understand it's already met several times in the last few months to keep both the regulations and the guidelines under review. I think it last met on the 26th of April as well. And on that occasion, they were discussing issues around the mortgageability, if that's the word, of the remediated homes as well. And I know they're looking to... they're looking very shortly to issue updated guidance to homeowners to access funding for certain works at an earlier stage, and that guidance is going to issue to the local authority shortly. That was something that had also been raised by families in Donegal, this idea of being able to access the funding at an earlier stage, because there was a kind of sequencing problem that I think was making it challenging for some people as well. So look, what I'm saying here is our work here isn't done. I get that. We have a very ambitious scheme in place. We've over 1,600 applications plus an extra 350 on top of that. We've billions set aside. We have an interagency steering group to look at implementation. And the very purpose of that is to keep all issues under review. And the issues that I've heard from you this morning and the issues that I've heard from representatives in Donegal are ones that I'll feed back into that process now. And I'm happy to keep in touch with you and your listeners on this too.
Yeah, because there's silly little anomalies in this. So say, for instance, my house was in a very bad condition and there was a wedding coming up or a confirmation or something like that there, or I just couldn't look at the cracks anymore. If I were to fill those cracks and paint the wall to try and make the house more bearable, I couldn't get on the scheme because you get on the scheme by a visual survey. So the engineer would come out and look at it, see that the cracks aren't visible, even though they might be present but not visible. And that means I couldn't actually get on the scheme. So we can't even dolly up our houses a little bit in the interim. You know what I mean? That's not common sense, Taoiseach. I'm sure you would agree. Well, I can't put words in your mouth. But it's those little things that don't make any sense.
Yeah, look, we have to tease through this because we have to remember at the end of the day, there's human beings in here, there's families involved here, and there's also, as you rightly say, family occasions and day-to-day family life that people are trying to get on with for their kids and their parents and their grandparents and others too. So I am proud, quite frankly, that we've put a scheme in place. I'm proud that we've put a scheme in place that is quite extensive, that there's a lot of consultation that did take place with homeowner action groups and others, but also with the councils, because they have a big role to play in this in terms of the delivery. It is now open. The money is now available. Applications are being received. People are applying. I mean, I do say that again, not to be argumentative, but just to give a bit of context. There are people, well over 1,000 people, closer to 2,000 people now actually who've applied.
I do get that. But just one final
getting practical help today. Yeah, okay. Sure.
One final one on this. Childcare facing a crisis here. You know the importance of childcare right across the country. The likes of Letterkenny Community Childcare, Childcare Services in Rafoe and Ardra, these are towns around the county. Several other facilities are affected by defective concrete. In fact, it's estimated, Taoiseach, 40% of childcare facilities in Donegal are affected by defective concrete, and they're going to be protesting next Friday because they say the government is offering no support to rebuild these facilities. I'm sure you don't want to stand over that, Taoiseach, do you? 40% of childcare facilities affected by defective concrete in this county, they estimate.
Excuse me. What I can certainly say to the childcare providers in Donegal is, I mean, we're investing a very, very significant amount in capital supports to expand, refurbish childcare facilities. And let's see if we can find a way to help these childcare facilities, even if it's outside of the context of the current scheme, if there are other ways we can help and support them. So I'm very happy if that delegation wants to write to me. I'm very happy to engage with both the Department of Housing and the Department of Children and see if we can make progress on that, because what we certainly want is an expansion of childcare places, not a reduction. What we certainly don't want are childcare facilities that aren't safe in terms of defective concrete either. So I'm offering this morning on Highland, if people wish to send me correspondence on that I'll personally engage with the Department of Children and the Department of Housing on behalf of that group.
Just generally on services, as you'd be aware, Donegal County has become the home to the second highest amount of Ukrainian refugees in the state. There's 2,000 IPAS applicants here, and thankfully, for the most part, are integrating well and have been well received. But as you can imagine, this puts great pressure on our services, you know, schools, particularly GPs, dentists and all that type of stuff. I recall earlier this year, your predecessor, Leo Varadkar, said he was putting together a special package to help such areas that are under pressure. Do you know if anything came from that, or what can your government do to sort of try and ease the pressures? Because, you know, an awful lot of the bad feeling doesn't come from where people are from or how many are coming here, if the truth be told. It's actually really, when it comes down to a competition for basic things like getting a GP's appointment or getting a bus, you know what I mean? It's not based really on any horrible stuff. It's just.
No, I'm really glad you said this.
Go ahead, Simon.
So I want to answer the question directly about resources now, but I just want to say this because I'm really glad you said this, because there's an effort by a small number of people in Ireland to be quite divisive on this, to be quite extreme on this. That's not my experience, though, of most people across the country. So when I meet most people people in most parts of this country, you know, there's a very, very, very significant difference between being an extreme far right kind of racist individual and being a decent person in County Donegal, just just wanting to know, hang on a second, what does a growing population mean for my local school, which is at capacity, or for GP services? So I'm very interested in talking about the first, talking about the second while condemning the first, if you get me. Now, we are finalising, you're right, Leo, I did make commitments in that space, and we are finalising what a new round of supports for communities look like. I now chair a cabinet committee on migration. If I'm to be very honest with listeners in Donegal, I think up until now, the approach to migration policy has been far too siloed. I've said before, and I say it again, if passing the parcel was an Olympic sport, we were at risk of getting a gold medal here in terms of one agency saying that's a matter for another agency. I have a unique role as Taoiseach in terms of an ability to bring agencies together and to start looking at this in the round and to say this is not just about an emergency situation anymore. It's more about actually what does a sustainable model of migration look like. On Ukraine specifically, I should say the number of people from Ukraine has dramatically reduced. And as a result of that, and I also want to say, by the way, so many Ukrainian people have integrated well into our communities and are playing a very important role in local businesses, local shops, kids in our schools. But the number of Ukrainians has significantly reduced. What that will mean is over the summer months, about 68 contracts for accommodation that has been used for Ukraine will not be renewed. I don't know if any of them are in Donegal, truthfully, off the top of my head. But what it does mean is that maybe hotels or facilities that had been taken out of community use for Ukrainian accommodation will start to now be put back into community use. And I think that's an important sign for people to see in terms of moving away from this emergency response to a more sustainable model.
Our local hospital, 80 GPs, 11 consultants from Donegal, kind of unprecedented last year, wrote to the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, expressing their concerns about the deepening crisis there. They effectively said there could be a services collapse. Our hospital here has a 38% higher attendance rate than the national average for a Model 3 hospital, a higher admission rate than average also. So as you can imagine, this puts great pressure on the services, the staff, the ED. It's funded as a Model 3 hospital, Taoiseach, but it's really a Model 3.5, a phrase we've coined up here, or even a Model 4 in terms of its workload. Would you support its status being reviewed? I know there's been a positive announcement in terms of capacity over the last 24 hours, but as you would know, and I'm not going to go through them with you now, we hear, you know, obviously we don't hear all the good stories because you don't hear that, and people understand that, right? And we're not over focusing on the negative stuff, but the good stuff, that's fine, and we celebrate that too. But we do have to focus where there is gaps on this show. Would you sort of urge Minister Stephen Donnelly, who's acutely aware of the situation, just to have another look at Letterkenny University Hospital and the unique challenges it faces, and perhaps maybe look at ways to better resource it?
Yeah, look, and I know that's something the Minister is aware of, because I was aware of it when I was in health. I know he's aware of it too, that there are particular geographic and population and demographic issues for the Northwest, and particularly for Donegal in the Northwest. Your cancer services is an example of that, where actually there's a cross-border dimension with Altnagelvin. So I think it is timely to look at how we resource, support and view Letterkenny Hospital and how it fits into the Northwest region, including on that all-island basis, because I do think there's a huge capacity there to look at how much more can be done between Derry and Donegal. I believe it in health, I believe it in education. There's also, I mean, as you rightly said, we are increasing bed capacity at Letterkenny University Hospital. We've seen an extra 50 beds delivered in the hospital between 2021 and this year, with another 72 planned. So that'll be an extra 122 additional beds. There is a real issue, I've got to be honest about this, there's a real issue with in certain therapy places, like a lot of people in the health, a lot of people accessing health services or relying on health services now will talk about a shortage of therapy posts, health and social care professionals. One of the things we're very eager to do is significantly ramp up the number of people we're training to work in the health service as well. We're again doing that on an all-island basis with medicine now, with nursing as well, and looking at opportunities to really harness the potential of ATU Donegal to actually train and place more people in Letterkenny Hospital too. So there is a lot of, I'm acutely aware of the situation. Yeah. I can point to good stats, as you say, but rightly we should focus on the areas in which we do need to do better.
Yeah, and I'm over time, but very quickly, pardon my ignorance, if there's a recruitment embargo, how do we provide extra beds? Because we could fill that hospital with a million beds, right? But it's like 4 to 5 yeah. staff per bed. So just explain to me, and pardon my ignorance, how we deliver beds in Letterkenny while there's an embargo on recruitment staff.
Because I think the embargo is often misrepresented, quite frankly. What the embargo, insofar as it is one, basically says is the HSE can hire a certain number, but no more. But what that does allow the HSE this year is to hire 2,200 more staff. There will be hundreds more nurses, many more doctors, speech and language therapists, OTs and the likes working in the health service at the end of this year compared to the end of last year. They've been given money to hire 2,200 extra staff into the Irish health service this year. Sometimes the way it's portrayed, you'd actually think they're not allowed to hire anyone or the number are reducing. There'll be 2,200 more staff for the health service this year, and actually 3,000 when you include disability services.
Yeah, and listen, you don't need any advice from me, but, you know, an awful lot of this stuff is not communicated to us. Do you know what I mean? Even in the area of even in the area of immigration or you know, the embargo, if we got more information on that, we could disseminate that, or people, you know, because often there's nothing there to counter, and we always like to put both sides there. But anyway, listen, Taoiseach Simon Harris, thank you very much for your time. Have a good day. I really do appreciate it.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Okay, thank you very much for that. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Right, so we learned today that Letterkenny Community Childcare have decided to take strike action on Friday the 7th of June. That's local and European election polling day. The group's building was tested in 2019 and was confirmed it had defective concrete blocks. Unfortunately, there are many buildings around the county that offer childcare facilities and facilities for children in the same boat. Geraldine Burks, manager of the Letterkenny Community Childcare. Good morning to you, Geraldine.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And I'm not sure if you heard our last contribution. We were chatting to the Taoiseach, who has committed to take a personal interest in this issue and has invited you or representatives of the childcare community to write directly to him. And he will engage with you and raise your concerns with the relevant departments to see if they can find a way outside of the scheme to support the rebuilding of these buildings. So he said that to us just in the last 10 minutes.
Well, that's great to hear, but I wrote to the previous Taoiseach and I got a response. And I also wrote to Minister O'Gorman, the Minister of Children, and I got a response from him, but his response was a sustainability fund. We are sustainable. We need capital funding. And we are one of many groups, as I said in my email, 24 groups have identified, both community and private. And I think government has a responsibility to cover both sections of the sector.
What is the current state of your facilities, Geraldine?
We have cracking internally and externally. We have grave concerns about one of our internal walls. It's a load-bearing wall, which is holding up our roof. And if it's a very windy or stormy day, the roof actually moves. The crack you can put your fingers into. It's very distressing to work in that. I'm not taking away from people living with mica. It's absolutely horrendous. But you're coming in every day, you're doing a safety check, you're checking all around the building. It's cracking inside as outside, so we check the outside. We had one occasion where it froze, and when the frost melted, a corner of the building fell off. So therefore, we couldn't take the children outside, and it's always about health and safety for the children. We are being reviewed again by a structural engineer in September, and we could find ourselves in the same situation as Rafoe, that he would say, no, I'm sorry, the building's unsafe.
And this obviously is devastating on many levels, but not least in terms of the very important role of childcare in the broader society and the economy in terms of people working and all that type of stuff. I mean, what's the plan B at this point?
That's correct. We were an essential service during the COVID. We are located very, very close to major employers in Letterkenny. And if we go, there's nowhere for children to go. There is no plan B. We have a deposit on a site behind Educate Together, and we have planning application in at the moment. We're waiting on that, but that has all been self-funded, fundraising. But the actual building cost, when we got the architect drew up the plans, is 2.8 million. Mm. That's before we kit the building out, Craig.
And you've no collateral on the site. You've no collateral on the site you're on at the moment, because that building's worthless.
Absolutely, and it's, you know, it's a very small site. Our plan is, if we get the funding to move, we will expand. We have 164 babies on our waiting list.
Wow.
We have over 400 children on other lists. That's preventing parents going back to work. They can't get their child into childcare so they can work. It's a whole circle.
And whilst, it's a real issue. Sorry, of course it is. And that's why I took the opportunity to raise it with the Taoiseach when I had. What he does after that remains to be seen. And of course, we are talking about Letterkenny Community Childcare. You've already mentioned RFO. There's issues in Ardra. In fact, it's estimated in your email, 40% of childcare facilities are affected by defective concrete. I mean, if that isn't a crisis in the sector, I don't know what is.
It's a crisis in the sector and it's a crisis in Donegal. And that information came from Early Childhood Ireland. So we can stand over that information because we're all registered with that organisation. So within 3 years of 40% of the childcare disappears in Donegal, where does that leave families? And a lot of families, it's not just about people going into employment, it's supporting families. We work very closely with TUSLA in that regard. There's also the aspect that children really need to go to their free preschool so that when they go to school, it's not such a traumatic event. It's very, very important for young children to get out and socialise and mix and learn self-help skills. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
And we lead them on the path to their next step. So I don't know what the Taoiseach has planned. I really hope that he is planning to invest in Donegal. Yet again, we feel a bit like the forgotten county. And I also really want to acknowledge all of, we're a business, so we don't qualify for this scheme apart from childcare. No businesses qualify. So if you have a building with a mortgage on it and it's crumbling and you're employees, you're left in a terrible position.
Very, very,
as well.
Very few businesses could sustain that business model. And I'll tell you really, ironically, the importance of the service means that when you can actually, you know, put down tools, so to speak, and have a public demonstration, a few and far between, because obviously then, you know, it can cause disruption to those that use the services. But there is a strike scheduled for this coming Friday. No coincidence that it coincides with polling day in the local and European elections, I'm sure.
Absolutely not. I have had TDs, I have had local councillors from every party in this building. I've had a European delegation in the building and they've all been horrified. And I've all, oh, yes, we'll do what we can. And I've had nothing. So, as you say, Greg, this is our fifth year of trying. So we just feel we have to really highlight this issue, not just for ourselves, for all the other services that have this, and for the community and Donegal, because if we lose our childcare, it has a whole economic impact on the county as well.
Not a nightmare. The group is striking Friday the 7th of June between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m. That's at the Letterkenny Public Services Centre. It's to highlight what they say is the lack of action from government, and that's demonstrable. And if you're not familiar with that building, if you're not from outside, if you're not from Letterkenny, it is the one there just off the Polestar roundabout with the grass roof. And you'll be striking there between 12 and 2. As much support, I'm sure, Geraldine, as is available, you're welcome.
Yes, everybody is welcome. All our past pupils, Greg, we're 41 years in existence and we started with volunteers. We still have a voluntary board. We're very much involved in the community and we would love community support. Lots of the other facilities and childcare services are joining us on the day. And we would love parents, grandparents, children all to be there to say this matters. This really matters to Letterkenny and to Donegal.
And there's a proper time frame on this because it is possible and probably likely that when the health and safety review takes place in September, that building will be condemned. I think that's what your gut's telling you, Geraldine.
It's what my fear is.
Yeah.
And it's my fear because, as you said, our service users, it was very reluctantly we're closing because we know people need the service, but we had to highlight this would be the impact. You wouldn't have this every day on a daily basis. So we're fighting for, we also employ 28 people, Craig, you know, so that's our employees could lose their job as well. And they are like everybody else. They have rent, they have mortgage, they have commitments in their lives.
Okay, well, hopefully this Taoiseach will take on board your concerns, as he committed to do so, and find some way to assist you before time runs out. For now, Geraldine Burke, Manager of Letterkenny Community Childcare, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Greg. Really appreciate the chance to get on and talk. Thank you.
No,
take care.
Very, very important. We do appreciate you making yourself available. All right, just to remind you, we are at our penultimate local election roundtable debate today after 10. Lifford Stranorlar, the Finn Valley, the east of the county. 12 candidates contesting 6 seats, and we've got a good lineup for you today. Martin Scanlon, he's an independent. Dakota, Nick Venman from Sinn Féin is also looking for your votes, as is Martin Harley of Fine Gael, Patrick McGowan of Fianna Fáil, Gary Doherty of Sinn Féin. So if you have a concern or a question for the candidates that affects the Stranorlar area, the Lifford area and surrounds, you know the area that that electoral area covers, then please get in touch with us now, 086 60 25 000. Just to remind you, if it suits you, and the majority of it doesn't, some of you like to watch what's going on, so you can go onto our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. We'll be live there. We're on the X platform, Highland Radio Donegal, and also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport. So that's the second from last local election debate, Lifford Stranorlar, coming up after 10. Some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Simon is talking for Ireland, but we've heard it before and before and before. Talk is cheap, they say. Hi, Greg. When applying to the MICA scheme, or the defective concrete block scheme, how long does it take council to respond to applications? Now, that's information we probably have locally, so if someone could let me know, I'll pass it on to that listener. Please ask the Taoiseach what he'll do about us having no endocrinologist for adults with type 1 diabetes and LUH. Sorry, I didn't get to that. Obviously, his remit is huge. Sort of asking very specific questions on issues. I'm not sure what it would achieve. But listen, we can put on that request to the Taoiseach's office. We can send an email with some follow-up stuff. Can you ask the Taoiseach about the CDNT shambles in Donegal, where they cannot seem to get staff? I'm a parent of a child with needs, and I'm expected to be a speech and language therapist, OT and physiotherapist, as well as be a parent to my other child and keep my job too. And my child and other children in Donegal are suffering because of a lack of staff. And he talked about trying to increase staffing levels in those areas. It is a major, major crisis. And what happens too is there's another couple of tiers then emerge, because there are some people that perhaps can have the money or scrape the money together to go private in some areas of that. And then there's others that simply don't. I live in a semi-detached defective concrete block house. The house detached has been approved for demolition. My house, however, has come back as option 3, just for remediation of outer and inner walls, not down to foundations. The concern for me is the deterioration of my property once the other property is demolished. And I think we heard from Martin McDermott of similar situations to that. There is an appeals mechanism, and I think you might be encouraged to sort of appeal that and make the argument of the lack of sense it makes. We have defective blocks in our house. Has any research been done into quarries to see if the deterioration materials still exist? There will always be these types of blocks coming from the same quarries as before. Right, back with the weather. Okay, we're going to talk about carers and caring now. Deborah Wilson's principal social worker for Five Rivers Fostering in the Northwest and is with us. Good morning to you. Thank you for your time this morning, Geraldine. Geraldine, can you hear me?
Greg, it is Deborah you're speaking to.
Oh, sorry. I beg your pardon. You're very good. My mistakes. My mistake there, Deborah. We do have Frank with us as well. Frank is a foster carer. Good morning, Frank.
Greg, how's it going?
Good, good, good. Sorry about that, Deborah. I'll come to you first. Talk to us about the need for more foster carers to come forward across the Northwest, if you don't mind.
Yeah, Greg, firstly, let me start by thanking you for giving us the opportunity to come on and speaking about the very important topic of fostering. We talk about the need for fostering. Look, there is a national crisis within foster care currently as we speak. And unfortunately, the demand for children coming into care and having the appropriate foster placements for them is is not appropriate to meet the demand. So look, we are currently looking to recruit foster carers within the Northwest and particularly within the Donegal area.
And what does becoming a foster carer mean? I suppose in terms of it's probably quite obvious what's what is needed of them, but also maybe the supports for because people might go, well, what would I do if something came up or what have you? So maybe you can talk to that if you don't mind.
Absolutely, Greg. Fostering is a really, really important function in society. And it is one that is absolutely necessary for a lot of vulnerable young people. As we're all aware, there is sometimes a need for children to come into the care of the state due to a number of reasons, for sometimes families are find themselves in a position where they can no longer care for their children for a particular period of time. And that could be due to sickness or illness of the parent. It could be due to addiction issues. It could be due to, some forms of abuse as well, And therefore, the demand for foster placements has never been higher in Ireland. And what Five Rivers do is that we recruit, support and train our foster carers to provide appropriate care to children that are very vulnerable and need placements. That support really looks like something like from the onset of a person, an applicant wanting to inquire about fostering, we take the person through that journey to where they are approved foster carers and have placements, and that support and guidance really carries through the journey of fostering.
And would it be fair to say that who we're talking to now is those that sort of go, okay, maybe, and if there even is a maybe there, contact the likes of yourselves and have that conversation and tease it out. Maybe that maybe becomes a no, or maybe that maybe becomes a yes.
Absolutely. And look, if anybody has, if this triggers even some sort of interest in terms of, fostering and wanting to find out a little bit more, we'd be more than happy to talk to anyone, and I'll give you out the numbers and contact details of that in a moment. But what I would like to say, and just to highlight that, fostering, foster carers come from all walks of life, from married couples with families, married couples who don't have children themselves, single carers, people from different backgrounds, gay couples, same-sex couples. We have a broad range of foster carers who provide excellent support and care to children in foster care.
Okay, and this is a subject we cover at least a couple of times a year, but unfortunately today our time's a little bit shorter with everything that's going on. So Frank, I think it's really important to sort of hear the experience of a family and what fostering is to you. You have five adult children, your wife and yourself share. Originally from Glasgow, you moved from Donegal. Why did you think you had a role in offering this type of care for young people?
I always find that quite a hard question to answer, Greg, to be honest. It's a feeling more than anything else. You feel as if you want to do it. You discuss it. You discuss it with your family, your children. To see if they feel the same way, they feel we've got something to offer. And then you make the move and you contact somebody like Five Rivers and you take it from there, and then you discuss it more and then you take the next step. But it's quite difficult to kind of pinpoint what it is, but it's a feeling.
Yeah, and you just have to chase that and follow through with it, I presume. 50 children have been placed with you as a couple since you were approved as carers. That's a huge amount.
Yeah, well, we don't really understand. When we started off, we'd done emergency placement. So you could be having, a different kid come to you every other day. That's why the number's so high. That's very rewarding as well. You're helping a kid who's, for some reason, something's broke down within their home environment, and you're giving them a safe place. That's a brilliant thing to do. And we also done another thing called respite, where other foster carers, so as they can get a break, their kids would come and stay with us, and that was like a wee holiday for them. Maybe not in Donegal. It was great, So that's why the number's so high.
And of course, at this point, you're very accustomed to it. But how important was the help and support in the early stages, and particularly with the short-term fostering, Frank?
Oh, it's crucial in all aspects of fostering, you know. I'm very fortunate with Five Rivers. We're always a phone call away, you know. Every day, you know, 365 days a year, 24 hours, all the time, you know. So any questions you have, you can phone. We've always felt really supported. So any situation that arises, you're not alone. You know, you always get help.
Yep, and of course, it's not for everyone, but it could be for someone listening. You would encourage them, would you, to at least begin the conversation and see if it works for them?
100%. It definitely isn't for everyone, but, you know, I think a lot of people would be surprised that it is for them, you know, and if they take that first step, they realise it, you know.
Okay, I think all we have time for is to finish up with the contact details and how people can get more information.
Absolutely. And, Greg, you know, just we have the Donegal office, which recently opened there in March of this year. And we have office spaces throughout the country, but the contact details for the Donegal office is 07493 86006. Equally, you can contact our assessing social worker called Harold Barber, and his contact details is 086 144 9296.
Now, people will be very familiar with our numbers and our contact details. So what we'll do is we'll hold them here. And if anyone listening and they'll know our number off the top of the head, wants those numbers, they can give us a call and we're more than happy to pass them on. Both of you, thank you so very much. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks very much,
all right.
Craig.
Thank you. Take care. Have a lovely day. Okay. We're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices. Then we return with our second last local election debate.